Well, here we are, Harry, wrapping up season one of our podcast, and we've got Mindy Holman. You and I have talked about how do we get a chance to brag about Holman and Mindy and the rest of the executive team. Well, we figured it out. We started a podcast, and now we get to do just that. For those that don't know, Holman is an automotive services company. It's a multi-billion dollar, privately held, 100-year-old company that Mindy leads. And one of the things that she says early on in the podcast is that they do everything with a people-first lens, and I can't wait to share that with everybody.
So one of the things that I love about this process is that I get inspired every single time from the leaders that we interview. And Mindy, who I've said before, is an exemplar for me. She represents what it means to be an amazing leader. She gets uncomfortable us talking about her, but she's proud to talk about the company, and I'm proud to talk about her and the company. And I want for people to realize this is within our grasp. We can be this way. You know, one of the things that she summarizes is that all of us can be better. And she articulates, you can take any page from this little book, which she then shares all these different pages that she has taken and uses to be better. And for me, I'm just so darn excited and humbled.
She came by so much of that, honestly. You and I both have some great friends and know some great dealers, a lot of great people in the car business. And Joe Holman, her father, sounds like one of the best. Talk about exemplars. I'm sad I didn't get a chance to meet him throughout my automotive career because he sounds pretty special and sounds like the way that they grew up as a family, he was leading by example every day.
You get a little taste of that as she describes her relationship with her dad. And I knew Joe, and he was exactly as she said, but the apple falls directly under that tree. So you do now know. So that's what it looks like. And I hope the world will see this is how one leads. And she's so humble and revealing and authentic and articulate. And I want the world to see, oh, this is how anyone can use this material to be a better person. Speak fluent gratitude. She tells a beautiful story about Char, this friend of hers that passed away, and how we can be on the lookout for opportunities to express gratitude, not just, you know, write in our gratitude journal. But that to me was a huge takeaway. And all the other chapters that she then says, I apologize well when I was snippy just yesterday, and assume positive intent because it's a challenge for her. I thought it was just wonderful how she took it to heart.
The story about Char really touched me too. I think that was a good reminder for me. And I've taken that away to, it's so easy to text and say thank you and to talk to people, but to take the time to write a note, put it in the mail and send it to somebody, that's something I'm going to be doing now too.
So I'm inspired to do that. Let's see if I do. You and I will be talking about it, and we'll be talking about it on future podcasts. So without further ado, please let the world meet one of our exemplars, Mindy Holman. So Mindy, I met you, oh, I guess 20, 25 years ago. And since we met, I've become both a friend, an admirer, an employee, a traveler on this life of parenting, marriage, and living as we age together and watching you as a leader, person, mother, wife. It is not an exaggeration to say, you know, I look for exemplars in my life, people who I can look up to and be inspired by and motivated by and try and be a better person, because look, she's doing it, he's doing it, and you are that and have been that for me, besides my friend. And so I'll stop gushing and say a little bit about your vision of our mission, be the sun, not the salt, and what you think about what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks to both of you. It's really a pleasure to be here with both of you, two of my favorite people, you know, on this wonderful journey together. What I love about Be the Sun is its simplicity, the simplicity of the message, because anybody can pick up the book, flip through, pick out a chapter, and enact it that afternoon. The messages, they're simple, but they're profound. And I think that we're living in a hard time in this world. Sometimes you feel a little helpless, like there's so much to do and how do you affect change? And you know, you can, in these little ways, you can affect change in the people around you, which can have a ripple effect and just a broader impact. And that's what I love about it.
I think those little things, I think that's what you're known for around the organization. I mean, for me to come in this late in my career and work in the automotive industry and be surrounded by people who believe it's a people business first, whether it's clients, customers, or our own partners, that's been big. And so those little things, you tell stories about your dad. I would love to have you share one of those stories about kind of your origin and how those little things became so important to you as well.
Well, yeah, I grew up watching my dad, and, you know, I thought all the car dealers in the world were guys like my dad. And what I learned is, wow, just what a unique individual he was. He always used to say, we're not in the car business, we're in the people business, which was exactly right. He wasn't a big car guy. You know, people used to say, Mr. Holman, what do you love about the car industry? And I think that they would expect him to say, oh, I get to drive the latest model or whatever. And he would always say, what I love about our business is, you know, bringing in young people, watching them take on more responsibility, giving them the tools they need to succeed, and seeing them rise up through the organization as far as their talent and drive would allow, and know that we were offering them a good job and the opportunity to take care of their families. And you know, now we have this thing called the Holman Way, which is our values and our guiding principles and our purpose. And our purpose is to provide rewarding jobs for our people and give them the opportunity to have a better life for them and their family. And that's a real thing. You know, it's not just words on the wall on a good looking poster. It's a real thing. And I'm probably proudest of the fact that we make our big decisions through a people first lens. We don't always get it right. We, you know, when we mess up, we'll try and do better, but we really do make decisions based on how it's going to affect the people around us.
I remember meeting your dad for the very first time. It was down in Fort Lauderdale. I was standing in line at a buffet, and he insisted on me going ahead of him.
Yeah.
And that was his way.
That was so typical. You know, you go to a lot of these, you know, big dinners, and you're all sitting at different tables, and there's a buffet line. So people will come around and say, okay, it's your turn to go up. And because he was at that one table, they'd usually come to him first and say, Mr. Holman, go ahead and open up the buffet. And he would always say, no, we would like you to have everybody else go first and come to us last. And he didn't even think about it. He didn't give a thought. It wasn't for show. It's just how he thought it should be. But other people noticed that. And that was just how he lived his life. Yeah. He was the epitome of servant leadership. He wouldn't have even known what that meant, but he just did it. It was just innate. So that's how I learned.
You did learn, and you model that too, to an nth degree, which is people who don't know you. What I would love, and I don't know how that we can do this, you know, there's 6,500 employees in Holman, but there's 8 billion people. I would love for all of them who don't know you to know this is possible. You can be like that thoughtful, considerate, aware of others, servant leader, human being. And it's not a unicorn-y way. It's so accessible. You do that all the time. And you run into somebody in the hallway and you give them the complete attention that they deserve. I've been with you standing there going, how does she do that? The standing there and chatting with someone, no matter who, for how long. And I'm like, amazing. And that way of being considerate and thoughtful as a leader, do you work at it? Is it just, well, no, I watched my dad. That's how I was raised. Do you think about being considerate and thoughtful and servant-y?
Sometimes I do. That doesn't mean that it's forced. It just means that I have to make sure that I do it well. You know, one of my favorite things is to, like yesterday, I happen to be in Florida right now, and I was walking around our Honda dealership down here. And you know, when I do that, I want to have the opportunity to speak to everybody, because I've learned that that matters. I mean, it just does. It is what it is. So I'm conscious of making sure that I get to chat with everybody, because you learn so much and it's so interesting. It's not about what I'm doing for them. It's what they're doing for me. Sometimes I'm just conscious of my logistics, making sure that you don't miss anybody, because if you weren't there to begin with, nobody would miss you. But if you make an effort and then you skip over some people, then it matters. So I'm conscious of things like that.
You know, you say chat, but I think you're a real listener. And that's what I've observed when I'm in your presence. I feel like I know you're looking at me, listening to me, and you're going to ask a good follow-up question potentially. And it's because you care. So it's not, I never feel like you're just chatting. It's kind of like you're there, you're present. And I think that's what makes it more than just a stop by for people.
Well, that's an important compliment to me, Connie. So thank you. I'm really grateful for you to say that.
Yeah. Minna, are you an introvert?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, what's so remarkable is that people don't really appreciate or understand that is that as an introvert, you can be so...
It takes energy rather than gathers energy, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I still love being with people. Mostly I like talking to people. I like talking to a group of people. But what I learned about it was that doesn't mean you can't do that stuff. But some people gain energy by being, you know, but the more he does, the more he gains. But I need to figure out how much I can do and then like break because I know I won't be doing it so well if I don't.
Right on.
I didn't learn to be a good leader of introverts until much later in my career. You know, just the way I fire things off quickly. I always trying to help people. I do to my kids. They say as adults, I still mouth when they're talking, which I didn't realize I did. But apparently I still move my lips when they're talking. Yeah. But
that's funny.
It took a long time to slow down and really pull people in and give them the time to process or the time to just not think about, talk about it yet and come back later to me. And then once I learned that, it was this like power, this harnessing this power, especially because I was handling a lot of creatives and website, you know, developers and people that weren't like me. And oh my gosh, once I figured it out, I was like, wow, what an epiphany.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's important. It's important.
One of my favorite chapters in the book is to be an Olympic listener. I feel like listening is the most overlooked part of communication. Everybody wants to be a good speaker, which I understand. They want to be a dynamic speaker or just not be nervous when they have to speak or, you know, and I think writing's actually becoming a lost art also. People don't think about the importance of listening in communication. It's so important. If you listen, you're going to learn something, right? You're going to learn about the other person, but you're showing respect. You're earning trust. You're building relationships. And it's important that when you're listening, it's not that you're just quiet, waiting for the other person to stop talking, but it means that you're actually hearing what they're saying, digesting it, and responding to it. So listening to me, it's such an important skill and so often overlooked. So I love that it's one of the chapters in your book, Harry.
And I so appreciate that, Minnie, because you bring it up as the skill, as an intention, as a practice, as a thing that all of us could get better at. And even listening to you now, thinking about that, I can lean into doing it better. I got to go to town more on that for myself in every conversation. And you do that. In other words, the technique of how do you be present and aware is be there and listen.
Yeah, right. So many of the chapters in your book are a skill. My dad was a great listener. My brothers are really good listeners. I've grown up among good listeners. So that was really helpful for me. If you're in a family with people that really like to talk and you got to get at your words, then it's probably more something that needs practice. I flipped through the chapters of your book and there are so many things in there that are skills to be honed, like speak fluent gratitude, which was another favorite of mine. And gratitude is also a skill to be honed. There's a lot about writing in gratitude journals. One of your guests recently spoke about the importance of that. And I love that too. It's funny, I just listened to that podcast with Kim, where he spoke about the importance of a gratitude journal. And then I was listening to another podcast with a woman named Jennifer Cohen, who's a fitness expert entrepreneur. And she was saying that, you know, the gratitude journals are great and they're helpful in the learning that skill of gratitude. But she said that your dopamine hit is even higher if you express the gratitude to somebody else. And I thought that was the skill, to be on the lookout for doing that. I have a story about my own journey with that. I had a wonderful friend named Char. that I started in the business with when I started 37 years ago. And my first real job was, she was the F&I manager at Holman Lincoln Mercury. I became the assistant F&I manager at Holman Lincoln Mercury. We had a rough beginning because she really didn't want any part of me hanging out in her office, you know, like, who's this Holman girl when it comes to my office? But we, you know, we sat and shared an office, a tiny little office for a year and a half, became really close friends. And she was a sister to me. And Shar and I went to Malawi for the first time together in 2019. And a year after that, she was diagnosed with cancer and she passed away in 2021. And Shar was a bright light. And one thing that she loved to do, she was known for writing cards. And not just a birthday card, or she, like, you'd just get a card from her in the mail, just surprised. And she would write on the front and on the back and, you know, inside, and there'd be underline and question, you know, exclamation points. And she would just gush and just tell you all these things, why she cared about you, why you were important, you know. And it was funny, at her service, like, three different people talked about this for her. So I wanted to honor her in some way. So my son Brad helped me make these cards. And this is a picture of a time we were in Florida together. And then on the back, there's a little picture of Shar. And then inside, it says that I'm grateful for you. And I invited people at the service to take one and just send it. You didn't have to do the whole Shar thing. You could just send it and sign your name if you wanted to. But I had a bunch of the cards left over. So I decided for the next year, every other week, I was going to send somebody one of these cards. And did I do it faithfully to that schedule? No. But I got pretty close. You know, by the time the year was up, I probably had 25 or 26 that I sent. And it was easy at the beginning because, you know, you have people in your mind. But right. Then I had to, it got a little harder, and I had to be on the lookout for people to send a card to. And I had to be on the lookout for people that I was grateful for. And when it was a goal, and when I was just open to it and mindful of it, I saw so much more to be grateful for and so many people to thank. I've kind of always had it in my mind that it was a skill to be a grateful person. But that really opened it up to me because I made myself want to do it. And then I found, first, it was hard. They're all over the place. You know, little things. Somebody at Wegmans was especially helpful to be finding something on an obscure shelf. But it proved to me that that's the kind of thing that can take practice, but the practice really pays off.
Mm-hmm. Boy, do I love that. So just thank you so much for that. What you just shared, we have to be on the lookout for opportunities to do it, not just think it.
Yeah.
And this little practice, this, you know, for every one of these podcasts, I always want to take away at least one. Oh, that's good. Well, be on the lookout for opportunities. That one's huge for me. Be on the, like, whether you text it or write it or do it. The other day, I was telling Connie, I helped somebody in the grocery store who had one arm getting a six pack out of their thing. And it's this work, this be the sun work, this be on the lookout, do all the good you can work, made me see. And then I went over and I tried and I helped him. And I'm just saying, I don't want to meddle, but I want this. What you're saying is that the practice of this work is good. We need to be reminded. We need to do it. And it's not the knowing. It's not like everyone already knows that speaking fluent gratitude is good. But I like this. Let's help each other do it more. This story helped me.
I like what you said about I didn't want to meddle, because I think I do that too. Like, I have this, like, should I do this, or am I going to bother them? And you know what? Maybe once out of 10 times people will, just prefer that you just left them alone. But that's okay if 9 out of 10 times people are grateful for, you know, what you've done. And it doesn't have to be a big grand thing.
No.
I remember I was in the Detroit airport once with my dad, and we were there for a Ford meeting, and it was like winter. And I had just bought this long red coat, and I really liked it, but I was a little flashy for me or something. This is 25 years ago. And a woman going the other way, kind of just came out of her way a little bit and said, boy, that coat looks great on you. And like, honest to goodness, I'm just saying that now. I can still remember how that made me feel. Mm-hmm. And it took her 2 seconds and I still have the coat. And I put the coat on and I remember that lady in the Detroit airport that went out of her way to say something nice about it. You know, it's such a little thing, but it's crazy the impact that it can have.
We want, and I'm so excited to be doing this work, crazy the impact that it can have. It does. It's empirical. It reverberates through everybody, the goodness that we do, the tiniest little ways. So I love that we can do more of this. Not so complicated. You don't need to, you know, take a course. You can pick up the book. And I use the book in my head. Like, what would the next right thing be? Oh, I know. Say and bite my tongue. I know. Say a sweet thing. You know what I mean?
Harry, I think we've treated it like exercise this week. Yeah. You know, I think what we've done, I mean, for me, Mindy, we've got a Teams chat going on too with a bunch of ambassadors within Holman. And so I just put it out there and said, this is going to be a busy week for our team. I've decided I don't want to get lost in how busy work is this week. So every morning I'm going to text somebody. And I need to be very intentional like that because sometimes I get lost in the busyness. So I was very intentional. And once I proclaimed it, of course, then I had to do it. But I've gotten so much back. And I know that we've talked about this, that it's what you get that fulfillment and it feeds your soul. And then you got so much more to give because you can just keep, you just know you're making a difference. It's been a really fulfilling week. It was a good reminder.
That's awesome. I love that, Connie. I love the intention of it because it's, you know, just putting the goal or the intention or, you know, putting it out there and making yourself follow up on it. I mean, but it hasn't been a big lift for you. And I know that what you've gotten back has been so much more. So I love that.
You always think you don't have the time. You've got a couple minutes. Yeah. You can always take those couple minutes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So Connie, you had a couple of people on your team said they had a couple of questions for Mindy. You want to fire those off? Because I've got a bunch.
Yeah. Well, what I said, you know, if you guys got a chance to be on the podcast instead of me, what would you ask Mindy? So I had this, I had a really great question from Kay. It said, oftentimes people, especially in positions of power, can make a really big impact when owning up to their own salt. What do you think keeps leaders from talking openly about their salt, especially with their employees?
Yeah, I think a lot of times people, you know, they're just afraid to be vulnerable because, and maybe especially as a newer leader where you feel like you just can't let your guard down or you can't show your true self. But I think I know that I have learned that being real, being vulnerable, showing where you made a mistake, apologizing well, another important chapter of your book, you know, why it might feel uncomfortable in the short run, in the long run, I think you're going to show that you're not perfect. You're not above anybody else. You need help from others. We're all better when we surround ourselves with good people that can help us and give us advice. There's an awful lot of most things in our company, people can do a lot better than I can do. And I know that. And I'm grateful for all those people that are good at their jobs. I was looking at an engine yesterday and couldn't tell one thing from another. But I think it's another skill because it takes practice. I was flipping through the book and I was thinking, there's some that I kind of know I'm good at, but what are the ones that I can be better at? And I came upon assume positive intent. And I think there are times I find myself to be cynical. And I do it more when I don't know other people. Like I don't do it with our own people. But if I'm driving, somebody goes speeding by me, my first thing is like, oh, he's driving that fancy car and he just thinks he can do whatever he wants. You know what I mean? And I like automatically go there a lot of the time. And then you know, first of all, sometimes I do it and I don't think that I'm a jerk driving that way. But then I realize, what are you doing? You do the same thing. And then maybe he's rushing to the hospital because something has happened. Or, I mean, you just don't know. So I'm trying to be better at that. And it's usually a conversation with myself. I often go to a negative when I'm around people that I don't know. And I don't know why I do that, but I know that that's something I really need to work on because I certainly do it. Maybe it's just an insecurity of my own being around people that I don't know, but I know that that's something I need to do better. So So that was a long-winded answer to that.
That's a good
question.
No, that's actually,
so before you have your,
we need to do.
Before you have your next question, Connie, Mindy, that I love both your vulnerability in that story, and also the, I want to be better at it. The desire, one of the qualities that makes a human heliotropic that we want to do more of is this desire to be better people. We're already good. Let's be even better. Your desire to quote unquote work on that, to examine that, to stare it down and say, what is that about me? Why do I do that? I love that quality that you have and exude. It's good work to look at your quote unquote flaws or mistakes or weaknesses or whatever is and say, yeah, no, I can be better. So I appreciate you saying that.
Well, but that
in itself is, you know, people look at you and see you as amazing and all that, but your point about you got plenty of work to do is also important for you to show and share so that we're all in it together. Nobody's got it together the way they look like they got it together. And you as a leader, just model and demonstrate that. And I appreciate that about you so much.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because like Harry, I just shake my head and I say, really? You've got a lot to do, Mindy?
Oh my gosh. I do.
I see you in situations, you know, you're respectful, you're kind, you're a leader who leads through example. And so I'd love to hear why you think you still got a lot to do.
First of all, everybody's got a lot to do. Certainly, I have a lot to do. You know, as I said, the assume positive intent thing is something that I've noticed for myself. Mm-hmm. And I think I can be better at having hard conversations with people. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm pretty good on the kindness spectrum, but there's times when you still need to be kind, but you also have to be forthright. And there are times I should be better at that, you know, saying with kindness things that people should be doing better. So there are just a few areas where I need to improve. I was snippy with somebody yesterday too, as a matter of fact, which is unusual for me. And then I reflected back on it and I realized it was because something that was said, it insulted me and should not have. Huh. And I came back in a snippy way. And I thought, well, shoot, now I have something to talk about on this podcast that I was yesterday.
I love that.
Good
because
content.
It's great.
And I apologized. I didn't say, I'm sorry you felt that way. I said, I'm sorry I did this and I mm-hmm. should not have.
And that is the beautiful lesson of this ongoing forever work, which is I was snippy yesterday. I got to go clean that up. And nothing more, nothing more. Exactly. It's just not good. Not good for business. Not good for humanity. And I love that we are on this mission to help more people get this. I have another thought, but before I ask it, Connie, you had another question from our team.
Yeah. Well, actually, we've already answered that one just in our own conversation. But one of the things I wanted to bring up, because what was interesting, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, I learned this listening to another podcast you were on. You didn't start right in the business. No. You came to the business after a few years doing some other things, important things, teaching and coaching, which was really interesting to me. Did you find that you had this same propensity for kindness and positivity before you got into business? Or was this something that evolved as your leadership style evolved?
I did not start thinking I was going to go into the business. My dad never pushed any of us. I have two older brothers. One has never been in the business. The other one had a 33-year career as a cabinet maker and makes beautiful furniture before he came into our business to help us with our community efforts. My dad never pushed any of either me or my brothers into our business. He wanted us to do what we, you know, thought would be where we could be good, where we'd be happy, where we could serve a purpose. Yeah, I was a teacher and a tennis coach down in Virginia. After I graduated from college, I stayed down there and I got my master's degree. I applied for a doctorate in psychology. I wanted to work with children. I wanted to be a child psychologist, you know, which in some ways I sort of still am in this new job.
Kind of.
So I applied and I got waitlisted and they said, you had a good application. We just had a lot of really great applications this year. I suggest to you, you apply next year, and I think you have a really good chance of getting in. So now I had this year where I was just going to, what do I do? Yeah, I could keep teaching. So my dad at that time talked to me and said, you know, if you're not sure what you're going to do, you might consider coming home for a year, for that year, working in the business, because at some point, you know, you're going to own a substantial amount of stock in this company, and it'll be helpful for you just to be able to make better decisions when that time came. So got nothing better to do. I'll come home for a year, and it was going to be for 1 year. And then I was going to go back and apply. And I had never really considered it because I thought business, you know, was all about numbers and spreadsheets. And my dad, I'm not really a car person, but I consider myself kind of a people person, which was why I wanted to pursue a career in psychology. So I moved up there for 1 year and found out that our business is all about people. It's all about, you know, it's first and foremost about our employees, and it's about our customers, and it's about our communities. And you could impact all those things through our business. Plus, it turned out that all the actual numbers are really like a puzzle to me. I mean, I really am drawn to them as well. That was kind of a secondary thing. But so what I was going to do for 1 year, we're 37 and counting.
Yeah.
So it was a much better fit than I thought it would be.
And aren't we lucky that that psych program rejected you? Because look at the impact that you're making in the lives of all of these people. And you say that the Holman Way, our purpose is to create a rewarding career and a better life for our employees and their families. I know that you take that completely like it's an absolute truth. And the filter through which I know that you want every single person in the organization to say, well, does that serve that purpose? Is that going to be allowing that person and their family to be okay? And I know how deeply you care for the people and their families. It's so impressive for me because you're a real person who is doing it. That's how you run a company. It's really cool because it's not just about being a successful company and the numbers. It's, are we taking care of our people and their families and our communities and our customers, people who are
listening? And their families. That's so unique.
And their families.
You'd see a lot of value statements with other companies would talk about taking care of their people, but to realize and know that it's not only important to the employee, but it's important to the company, that their families matter. And that's why there's so many people. I mean, that's one of the first things you learn at Holman is there's somebody down the hall that's probably related to that person too. So. A lot of grandchildren, children.
I know.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I was on an anniversary. We do anniversary Zooms now because we started this during the pandemic, but we turned out that it really works well. But people that have 20 years and up that are on a 5-year milestone, so we do it quarterly. And we were just chatting. And, you know, one of the women on the call, her mom, she's been here 30 years. Her mom still works here, and her daughter just started working here, you know, so we've got these generational
amazing,
and you know, and there's no greater compliment I think than any of us can have than for a parent to tell their child, this is a good place for you to work, to spend your career.
Good one.
There's just no greater compliment from that. And we have lots of family members in our business.
Look, I mean, I've always said that about any company, the greatest compliment you could say is that I would want my son or daughter to work in this company for all the reasons. And I am as lucky as they come because my son is working for our company. Oh, and wait, Connie's son is working for our company. Now this, we wouldn't do that for our children, were it not for the culture and what we think this little company can do for those young people. They're not so young. So
it's what attracted them, because a differentiation in the marketplace now can be hard to come by. Yeah. But when you find a place where you feel welcomed, appreciated, supported, I think that's the driver to come work for Holman, not just because it's a lot of nice people, but it has that too.
Well, and I just want to say that, you know, we do have a lot of these family members, but, you know, we don't just hire Ethan and we don't hire Connie's son just because they're related. I mean, because I learned a long time ago that you can't tell people who to hire because it's not going to work out in the long run.
Right.
So I just want to say that all these people, they get that job on their own merits. I mean, you can't just be a friend of Mindy's or, you know, somebody that knows Harry or it's related to the person that works in billing. They have to come in. They have to stand on their own, and they have to prove that they can be, you know, a contributing member of the team, both in their job set and in contributing to the culture. So just a shout out to both your kids.
Oh, that's good.
Thank you very much. It's an aspiration to create an environment and a culture where people can thrive and be respected and take care of themselves, their careers, their family members, their community. It's such a great company. And I know you are uncomfortable when we praise our company for being so cool, but I want people to come and look at it and say, it can be done. We're never finished. We're always trying to get better. But I do think that it's something that other companies and people can come and look at. We're doing some really good, wonderful things for our communities, for our employees, for the business, for people. And I would love for other people to come and study us, look at us and say, well, how do you do it? Come and ask. We're pretty transparent about that.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, we're far from perfect. We're better in some areas than in others. I'd like to tell you that all 6,800 people care about this the most. So we're always needing to improve, but I don't like it when you talk about me so much, but I'm good with you when you compliment the company, because the company is not me. The company is this group of really incredible people that by and large do really care about these things. I mean, I talk about gratitude. I have so much gratitude for the people in our company.
No.
Yeah, well, leading by example, that you can put a people lens on things first and make decisions that way. It's clear. It's not just you. You have a whole leadership team of people that know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. We do. We're very blessed.
And so I just want us to continue to do this work and practice these skills to be more effective in our listening, to be more grateful and express it, not just feel it and think it. Mindy has been such an inspiration and a helpful guide for me personally and professionally, being there for me in my darkest hour. She sent me two beautiful quotes, one from Mother Teresa and one from John Wesley, that are chapters in the book. Do all the good you can is chapter one, and do it anyway is a ripoff of Mother Teresa's quote. No matter what, be heliotropic, do the right thing. These are really simple principles that have guided me. I use them, think about them. I don't mind saying that to you publicly, Mindy, because we all need people to help us be more like that. John Wooden from UCLA reminded people to always point to the person who threw you the ball so you give credit, not for your shot, but for the person who made it. I love that we can find people to be exemplars, to motivate us by their achievements and who they are and how they are to say, oh man, I want to be like that. So receive that love.
Love received.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you.
You know, I think there's some of these principles that we've been, you know, you two have been talking about for even longer than I've known you. But there was something that you shared at the town hall that inspired me at an even higher level, which was the Unreasonable Hospitality book. I would love for you to talk a little bit about why that connected with you and how you see that relating to our business.
Yeah, that was a wonderful book. But the thing that struck me about the book is you hear the word unreasonable, it has a negative connotation. And the way it was used in this book in Unreasonable Hospitality, it talked about really all these over the top service things that this restaurant in New York City rated the best restaurant in the world. And it got me thinking about unreasonable in a different way. We set limits on ourselves by saying that's undoable or too pie in the sky. And I look around our business, we have people doing unreasonable things, going way above and beyond for a customer. But I one thing that comes to my heart when I think about that is, Harry, when we traveled to Malawi, a group of people from Holma, we do all kinds of community stuff and it's fantastic. But this group of people wanted to do something international, a mission trip with the company. And so I'm the board chair for this organization called Urban Promise International, which funds ministries in different countries, especially Africa and in the country of Malawi, one of the poorest countries in the world. And after a time, this group decided they wanted to come to Malawi, 15 of them. And it's expensive to get there.
Fundraise.
It's hard to get there. You fly 15 hours and to get another flight the next day. They had to take the same amount of PTO that anybody else would do doing some kind of a domestic mission work. They've decided to fundraise for a library for this school. They spent vacation time. They took time from their families. But not only did these people do all this stuff, they left some of them left their family there to worry about mm-hmm. them while they were gone. Mm-hmm. You know, so you talk about unreasonable. That was an unreasonable thing for that group to do. And I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever felt as proud or as grateful as watching them. Who we had somebody from Portland, somebody from Sacramento, a lot from New Jersey, but didn't know each other, come together. They found 40,000 books. They filled the shelves. They painted murals. They did landscaping outside. They played with the kids. The kids were looking in the windows, looking at the books with wonder, waiting to come in and be able to touch the books. We had laptops. There was no electricity there. There's no indoor plumbing. Since we have been there, electricity has reached there, and the computer lab, these laptops that we have are working. But that is unreasonable. When I think about that unreasonable hospitality, just that things that are unreasonable are so profound and meaningful mm-hmm. when they're achieved. And that's when I got to watch that group do, and what an unbelievable blessing that was.
I mean, I was witness to it. I invited myself to that trip.
Yeah, you did a lot of good while you were over there, Harry. Oh, we need a well. Okay. Oh, we need electricity for this. Okay. Yeah, yeah. You've done a lot of good over there. That was another beautiful thing to watch.
I got inspired by you and by them and by the need. It was do all the good you can. And it was like, oh my God, I can't do enough. Solar. I was real into the solar well, yeah, solar
right.
cornmeal.
Well, the whole sun thing. Tie-in. Yeah.
The sun. You helped organize me to speak, be the sun, not the salt, to that group. And I really can't wait to go back again in a couple of years because, you know, the message really did penetrate. It really got through to them, this, and I got so many different emails and texts back from people.
The pictures
and the simplicity of what it means to be kind and helpful and compassionate and giving and be aware of others and the power of what it means to be heliotropic.
Well, I had been there in 2019 and I spoke to that group and I talked about Be the Sun and I gave out books. So when we went back this last summer, there were books around. And the elementary school children had drawn pictures of what Be the Sun meant. And it had been used in their schools and their after-school programs. And Harry come in like, you're Dr. Harry Cullen of Be the Sun. And like, you know, some of them were just going to faint. It was wonderful. But that absolutely spoke to them. So it just shows that it's a message can resonate in, if it can be the same in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, that it can be in Lilongwe, Africa.
Yeah.
It can be received and it can be practiced anywhere in the world, literally.
Yeah. Oh, drop the mic, Mindy.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's that unreasonable. Go after the unreasonable. I love that. It stuck with me.
What I couldn't believe, and to your point, Mindy, it has resonance in its simplicity.
Yeah. I mean,
it blew my mind, and it shouldn't, but it still does, that people can relate and find it useful in Malawi or Mount Laurel. And that's one of the things I'm most excited about and can't wait for more people of the 8 billion people who'll be listening to say, I can take a page from this and use it immediately, today, just like you said. So I'm really glad you said that and I saw it and I'm more inspired because if, like you said, you brought them that book 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and they were writing chapters on the walls. for their schools. It was just so beautiful.
It was beautiful.
You know, not for any other reason other than, oh my God, people all over the world can benefit from this. Mm-hmm. So let's go share it with them. So you get the final word. Is there anything you'd like for the world to hear related to this mission, Be the Sun? This is the last word and you get it.
Well, I just think this is where I started, but Be the Sun is accessible to all of us. It's easy for all of us. We can set an intention, like Connie talked about earlier, to pick it up once a week, flip open to a chapter, and think about how we can implement that simple wisdom for the day. And we can all do it, no matter what is in there. The things that I think I'm best at, I can read the listening chapter again and find a way to do it better. And there's certainly plenty of stuff in there that I can use on a daily basis to help my deficit. So I think, you know, you wrote in there, Harry, just do it, right? I think that's what we have to do. We just decide we're going to do it. And, you know, and it's those little things. It'll just be amazing as you find that those little things have such a big impact, and that impact is just going to spread.
What a great way to end. Thank you for giving us the time today and your amazing spirit. And we're excited that we get to share it with, I think Harry says there's 8 billion listeners we have. So we get to share with 8 billion people and the 6,500 employees that work at Holman.
Most important.
Most important.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Mindy. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye, guys.
Bye. At Be the Sun, Not the Salt, our mission is to spread this message and make the world a better place. In our podcast, we hope to share stories that nudge each one of us to be our best self. If you heard something today that nudged you, inspired you, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at stories@bethesunnotthesalt.com. And who knows, we may feature you on an upcoming episode.